flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, Thursday, January 30th, 2025. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us today here on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. Sports bar chain Twin Peaks is going public, and it could be just the first in a series of restaurant IPOs this year. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, soaring mortgage rates sent pending home sales plummeting nationally last month. But data also shows in 2024, home prices rose across all corners of the Chicago area housing market. We now welcome in Steve Kirsch, Chicago-based real estate and housing expert. Steve, good afternoon. Thanks for being with us here on the Noon Business Hour today. Let's start nationally. I want to get your thoughts on today's pending home sales data.
Andy, this is just what you say. This is a mortgage-related problem. We had good sales, closed sales in December around the country, but those were based on September and October. Pending sales were interest rates were about a half percentage point lower. Once they crept back over 7%, that seems to be a psychological barrier for home buyers. And we just saw the sales dry up across the country in November. Was every region pretty much was down double digits.
And so was the Chicago area immune from that? How are things shaping up here locally, Steve?
Pending sales are down in the Chicago area as well. Again, at the end of the year, at the end of 2024 in December, we had a little bit of a bump in sales, but we're suffering the same problems. Mortgage rates have risen and home prices, especially in the Chicago area, both the city and the metro area, up more than 11% year over year in December. So we're running into an affordability problem for buyers, and that's holding down sales.
All right, so there are definitely some issues, some concerns there, Steve. Curious, if we have people still in 2025 set on becoming either a buyer or a seller, what is your advice here, given that given where we are here in the market?
Well, for one thing, we have seen, because sales have slowed down, we have seen inventories rise. That's a good indicator for buyers. That means they'll have more choice. We've seen houses sit on the market a little bit longer, which is also good for buyers. You don't get as rushed when you're buying. But again, they still have to overcome the mortgage hurdle and the down payment hurdle. And I think that's ties into some big price gains we've seen in some neighborhoods of the city that we haven't seen in a long time, particularly on the south side. And that's basically, folks are willing to shop a little bit further, move out of their comfort zones maybe, and look to some of these up-and-coming neighborhoods in order to be able to afford the house that they would like.
And Steve, before we let you go, I'm going to ask you to look into your crystal ball here for 2025. If you were to predict from your perspective, where do you see the forecast going here for the local housing market this year?
Well, I would suppose that we're still kind of in this interest rate guessing game. Obviously, a lot of the sales are mortgage sensitive right now. It's going to depend on the Fed. It's going to depend on inflation. But I think, buyers better get used to the fact that we're not going to see, 2.5-3% interest mortgage rates again. You're going to have to, get ready to have rates higher for longer, and that's going to affect your housing decision. I don't see that really changing very much as we move through the year, unless, of course, the Fed does something dramatic in between.
All right. Thanks so much. That is Steve Kirsch, Chicago-based real estate and housing expert. Coming up, a sports bar chain going IPO.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Private company Fat Brands is spinning off its sports bar chain Twin Peaks. That's creating speculation about similar moves by other restaurant groups. We're joined now by RJ Hotovy, head of analytical research at Los Altos, California-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. RJ, good afternoon. Welcome to the Noon Business Hour. Thanks for joining us. All right, so let's start there with Twin Peaks. Why the IPO move, and what is that significance here in the current market?
Yeah, it's the first IPO we've seen in the restaurant space for about a year. In fact, the last one we saw was about a year ago with Pinstripes, a name that's familiar to a lot of Chicagoans. But I think it just reflects people's comfort with the market. Obviously, it's had a pretty good run the last year or so. And with a good run like that, that's going to come demand for new IPOs and new growth stories. And I think that's what's really driving it. Restaurants in particular have been a category we've seen a lot of IPOs the last couple of years, whether it's Cava, Sweetgreen, and a number of others that have performed actually generally fairly well. Not all of them have, but it's created demand for it. And so I think Twin Peaks is the first of what could be several IPOs in the restaurant category in the year ahead here.
Yeah, and RJ, experts seem to agree there, predicting a lot more here to come. If you were to kind of look at the array of restaurants, where are you looking in terms of who could be next here?
There's been a couple of rumored names for a while. Panera, which had been a public company once upon a time, but their parent company, JAB Holdings, is looking to potentially do an IPO. That's something that's been rumored for over a year now. So that's one that keeps getting pointed to. A little bit of they've had some management changes as of late, so that may push that back a little bit, but that certainly is a name to watch. Fogo de Chão is another one. The Brazilian steakhouse concept is a name that's been rumored for some time, and at one point had a publicly announced plans to do an IPO, but I think that got shelved with market conditions, at least in the latter half of last year. So those are the two that keep popping up. The other name to keep an eye out on is Inspire Brands, which is the parent company of Buffalo Wild Wings, Jimmy John's, Dunkin' Brands, Baskin Robbins, and several others. It's one of the largest restaurant organizations by number of locations out there, and that's been one that's been speculated in the IPO talk for a while, too. And that would be a big deal. That would be one of the larger ones that we would see from the restaurant space in the year ahead.
Well, lots of big names to keep an eye on there. RJ, curious, kind of a two-part question here. When it comes to restaurants making this change and getting into the IPO space, what is it that makes that attractive for them? And on the other side of that, once Twin Peaks does and other, you mentioned Pinstripes, others that have do make that jump, what are some of the challenges they may face?
Yeah, I think a lot of the companies that are looking to IPO, one, that they're looking for growth capital. They want to expand. It's been kind of a couple of years since we've seen a lot of companies really aggressively start to open up locations, partially because of the pandemic, uncertainty with consumer behavior. But I think in this day and age, a lot of restaurant chains are looking to grow. They know there's demand for what they offer. People are still looking to dine out. And there's people who move to new locations. We've seen a lot of relocation, a lot of migration of people. And with that, I think a lot of the chains are trying to keep up with that. So I think that's one of the big things that we're looking to see and partially why we're seeing some of these IPOs. I think a lot of the owners of these brands, too, are looking to make exits, and get their financial returns as well. But the challenges after an IPO, I mean, there's a number of things. I mean, it's still a very difficult environment for restaurant operators, even with increased consumer demand. We're still dealing with inflated costs, both food and labor, picking the right markets and competition for the sites is as aggressive as ever. So a lot of factors that play into, a company's decision to go public here, even with increased demand for restaurants.
Lots to keep an eye on, that's for sure. Thanks so much. That's RJ Hotovy, head of analytical research at California-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. Up next, retail on Chicago's Gold Coast getting a boost.
Noon Business Hour continues.
Clothing chain Anthropologie taking space in the ground floor of the Newberry Plaza condo tower on North State Street in downtown Chicago. Let's talk about what that means for retail on the Gold Coast with Rachel Herzog, reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. Rachel, thanks for being with us here on the Noon Business Hour today. All right, so safe to say that Anthropologie making a big splash here in Chicago's Gold Coast neighborhood. What should we know?
Yeah, so they're planning a new 16,000 square foot store in the Gold Coast, which is, a really popular retail destination for, luxury and contemporary fashion brands. But it also follows Anthropologie closing a couple of other stores in Chicago. They recently closed their store in the Block 37 shopping mall on State Street and in the shops on Fremont in Clybourne Corridor.
When we look at Gold Coast's overall performing when it comes to the shopping district, where are we at, and how could Anthropologie maybe either improve that or maybe detract from that?
Yeah, so the Gold Coast has very little retail vacancy, I think less than 10%, which is definitely a contrast to some of other downtown shopping corridors. And I think this Anthropologie lease really represents a way that, this Gold Coast area is kind of changing or modernizing a little bit. You know, this location at the base of the Newberry Plaza condo tower used to be the original Morton Steakhouse, which closed down in 2020. So now we're seeing, a contemporary fashion brand and a new restaurant instead.
So, Rachel, looking ahead here, when you talk about challenges that retail area in the Gold Coast may face, you talk about how there's really not a lot of vacant space. So clearly business isn't exactly struggling in the area. But what challenges could that district, whether it's Anthropologie or other locations, maybe encounter here in 25?
There's definitely competition. But, when you have a lot of brands in one place, it does make, that area kind of a known destination. Retail always has these challenges of, e-commerce and less foot traffic with people working from home and things like that. So it's always interesting to see how, different corridors weather those throughout the years.
And Rachel, before we let you go, the Gold Coast, we mentioned it, it's home to a lot of luxury retailers. Does that sector hold up better than other parts of retail, especially maybe in an area like Gold Coast?
Definitely. Yeah. Luxury shoppers, kind of exist in a different universe. It's people, that have money to spend or people that, don't have money to spend and are choosing to splurge. So even though, regular consumers might be pulling back, people that have money to spend, are still kind of flocking to these areas.
Great stuff. Thanks so much. That is Rachel Herzog, reporter with Crain's Chicago Business. So still ahead in Technology Thursday, a call for the NFL to use more tech in the effort to make sure games are officiated fairly.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
And good afternoon. I'm Andy Dane in for Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. President Trump sharing his thoughts on a deadly jet helicopter crash in Washington. Police talking to persons of interest in the weekend killing of a man on Chicago's Northwest Side. In Technology Thursday, a look at the expanding role of tech as a tool in officiating professional sports. Also on the technology beat, American teenagers increasingly being misled by fake content on social media and online. On the markets, the Dow is up 218 points right now, the NASDAQ down 22, and the S&P 500 up about 22 points. AccuWeather says cloudy skies for the rest of the afternoon, breezy, mild, a high of 53 degrees, could see some showers along the way as well. Right now, cloudy, 49 degrees at 1231. Well, all 64 people aboard an American Airlines jet that collided with an Army helicopter last night are believed to be dead, along with the military crew. It's likely the worst U.S. aviation disaster in almost a quarter century. President Trump implying a DEI program if the Federal Aviation Administration is responsible for the crash.
The FAA is actively recruiting workers who suffer severe intellectual disabilities, psychiatric problems, and other mental and physical conditions under a diversity and inclusion hiring initiative spelled out on the agency's website.
Flight conditions were clear as the jet arrived from Wichita, Kansas. Two people have been arrested in the killing of a 63-year-old man in the Norwood Park neighborhood over the weekend. The body of George Levin was found by his sister Sunday night at his home on Talcott and Oriole. Investigators say his hands and mouth were bound by duct tape and his ankles were tied with a power cord. His cell phone, car keys, and wallet were missing. Charges have not yet been announced.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The market's mostly higher here on this Thursday afternoon. Joining us now is Paul Nolte, Senior Wealth Advisor and Market Strategist at Murphy and Silvest. Paul, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us here on the Noon Business Hour today. We've had a host of tech earnings, which caught your eye, and what are your takeaways here as the week comes to an end?
Yeah, a little bit of a mixed bag. I mean, when you look at Microsoft, it's kind of the poster child, if you will, and their cloud computing division came in a little bit underwhelming, and the stock is down a little bit. Tesla, even though their profits were down a little bit, revenue was down a little bit, stock is traded a little bit higher. Meta is, I think, probably the closest thing that we're looking at as far as being incorporating in AI and developing that a little bit more. So, again, kind of a mixed bag when we look across the board. I'm more concerned about broader commentary by a lot of the companies, not just the tech companies, about what they're seeing coming quarters. And that is also a mixed bag and a little bit disappointing. And part of the reason why we're seeing some stocks, when they report earnings, trading much lower, because the forward guidance is not as good.
So, Paul, you talk about kind of that mixed bag with some of the techs. Areas. It really has been a market leader for a number of years now. Curious if you see that continuing here as we roll into 2025.
Yeah, I mean, it's an area that we're very underweighted in. We think that there's not much juice left to squeeze out of many of those companies as their revenue numbers and earnings numbers tend to normalize. When you have companies as large as NVIDIA, Microsoft, Apple, it's hard for them to grow many years well above the rate of global economic growth, because they do serve the global economy. And we're starting to see that in some of their areas. So it's going to be difficult for them to command those type of market multiples that they do have on earnings. And we think that those will probably over time, over the next couple of years, come back down to where they have historically traded. And that means for many of those companies, they could see 10 to 20% declines over the next couple of years as the valuations for those companies normalize a little bit closer to their historical ranges.
Paul, when we take a look at just the broader financial markets here heading into the new year, what in your eyes could be the biggest threat to the markets overall?
You know, I think the biggest threat for the market is still inflation. Powell highlighted it yesterday. It's one of the things that the Fed's keeping a closer eye on than they are employment. Their feeling is the economy is doing okay, employment's fine, but inflation is is being a little bit more sticky than they would like, and certainly well above that 2% range that they have. So I think that's going to be one of the issues. We're seeing it in a lot of the commodity prices. Commodity prices in general have been picking up over the last 3-4 months. So I think inflation is going to be one of those things that's going to be problematic for the markets, because maybe the Fed won't be able to cut rates as much as the markets think at this point.
And Paul, before we let you go, how about opportunities overseas? Is there anything maybe catching your eye on the international front here?
Yeah, when you look internationally, a lot of companies that match up very well with U.S. companies that are selling at a bigger discount than U.S. companies. So international, very inexpensive. Emerging markets, very inexpensive. The caveat is the strong dollar is really kind of taking away some of that ability for those international companies to outperform their U.S. counterparts. So we'd like to see the dollar become a little bit weaker, and then those returns that we get internationally can be translated back into a cheaper dollar, and we will realize better returns in the S&P 500. Hard to do when the dollar is very strong.
All right, lots of interesting stuff there, as always. Thanks so much. That's Paul Nolte, Senior Wealth Advisor and Market Strategist at Murphy and Silvest in Chicago. Up next in Technology Thursday, using science to determine a first down in football.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It is Technology Thursday, and close calls in the NFL playoffs are generating calls for the greater use of tech in officiating games. Meantime, Major League Baseball has been experimenting for several years with the use of robotic umps. We now welcome in Mark Gannis, president and co-founder of Sports Corp Limited here in Chicago. Mark, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us here on the Noon Business Hour. All right, so lots of talk about AI
and officiating, especially after some of the playoff games this past weekend. From your perspective, how could AI kind of factor into specifically the NFL and when we talk about those first down markers?
Well, it's a combination of how to be able to identify what the line of gain is, or even, you know, crossing the end zone for a touchdown, and do it more precisely. The game has gotten so... It's funny, there was a movie a few years ago with Al Pacino, Any Given Sunday, and his big spiel, speech as head coach is inches. There are inches everywhere. It's the inches that make you a champion or lose you a championship. The NFL is the quintessential game of inches. We saw that in the Buffalo Bills, Kansas City Chiefs game, where for want of an inch or two, or whether he made it or didn't, the Bills could very well be on their way to the Super Bowl right now. And so what people are saying is, since we have technology for so much in the NFL and in sports, why don't we, instead of having the imprecise umpires and referees coming in from the sidelines to place the ball, and then have the imprecise 10-yard marker with the what are called the chain gang that has been there for many years, why don't we use a set of cameras and AI to identify precisely where the nose of the ball hit and precisely where the line to gain is for the first down. And so the league is looking extensively doing it. It's been testing it now for a few years. There's a system that people who watch tennis tournaments may be familiar with. It's called the Hawkeye system from Sony, that is used to identify whether balls that are traveling upwards of 100 miles an hour, mind you, actually are in or on or outside of the line. And that's used dispositively to make determinations in tennis, and could be used in football as well.
Mark, I mean, it seems like a win-win, really, for the league, whether it's the NFL or MLB. I mean, you're making sure that the calls are correct. You're taking pressure maybe off of the officiating crews or the umpires in baseball's perspective. As far as negatives, I mean, besides the fact that you know we sitting at home on our couches can't tweet about, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs getting all the calls. What could be some of the negatives and the detractors here for both NFL and MLB if they do want to make that dive into AI?
A number of things. First, how long it takes to make a call. That is, if it takes a while, you don't want that. You want the calls made quickly and accurately. So you don't want the pace of the game to get all screwed up. But let me tell you something that they found occurred when there was the ability to have calls reversed by instant replay in the NFL. They found that officials were making the wrong calls more frequently because they knew that they could be that the call could be corrected. It takes away some of the pressure on the officials to actually get it right each time. And that's counterintuitive, but that's what they found actually occurred. Now, this is a different story. This is, are you inbounds or out of bounds? This is, did you get the 10 yards or not? So there really isn't a subjectivity to it. So in this case, it should work. In baseball, they're working on the same thing with the pitcher with the balls and strikes. And in some cases, what they've got is they've got an earpiece in the umpire's ear, so the umpire is still making the call, but he can be assisted by the sound of the computerized system. What AI is going to do is it's going to allow it to happen much more quickly, and that's the big change today versus just a couple of years ago.
It's going to be a lot of fun to watch how this develops, as Chicago sports fans have kind of become accustomed to blaming the officiating. We'll see how long we can do that for. Great stuff. Thanks so much. That's Mark Gaddis, president and co-founder of Sports Corp Limited in Chicago. Join us this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. Still to come today, artificial intelligence helping to fuel the spread of bogus information, especially to young folks.
You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
And Technology Thursday rolls on. A study published by the nonprofit advocacy group Common Sense Media finds more and more teenagers are being misled by AI-generated content. We're joined now by Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group and professor of advanced media in residence at the Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University. Shelley, thanks for being with us here on the Noon Business Hour. All right, so AI-generated photos, videos, and content. We're hearing a lot about how that is misleading portions of the American public, but specifically, what are we seeing among teens?
So the Common Sense Media thinks that, well, they polled 1,000 teenagers from 13 to 18 years old and came up with something that will surprise no one. About 35% of them think they're being deceived by fake content online, and most say that they've encountered at least some content that was real yet misleading, and about another 20-some-odd percent thought that the information turned out to be fake that they had shared themselves. So basically, everybody knows, the teenagers now know what we all know, which is that there's a lot of nonsense online, and you cannot believe anything you see. Not some of the things you see. You really have to question everything you're seeing at this point.
Well, you know, we talk about the major tech companies. We're seeing some changes even in policy. Obviously, Meta has parted ways with third-party fact-checkers. I'm curious how this misinformation and maybe acknowledging it from the teenager side impacts their trust in those digital platforms and major tech companies as a whole.
Look, I really hope that it's a sign or a signal that we've got a group of teenagers that are smarter than their parents. You know, you can't believe everything you read has been something that's been said cliche for as long as I've been alive. But we all default to trust. Everybody, we're wired that way. You don't start with a negative attitude. You go to a group of people, you meet some new people, you're going to trust everyone until they prove to you you shouldn't trust them. But with the internet, you need to default to distrust, especially now in the age of AI, and it's very hard to do. And the fact that this many teenagers on survey statistically are saying, hey, you know what, we don't trust this, we know that this is fake, that's really quite heartening, because to be fair, everyone would do better right now if they questioned everything they saw and they actually went and looked and did a little bit of research to find out where the things came from that they were believing. You know, the fact that the young people have actually taken this to heart is fantastic.
And Shelley, before we let you go, I mean, you mentioned obviously, yeah, it is encouraging to see that some of this content is being spotted by the younger generation. But you mentioned some of the older generations are falling for it. You see it almost every day when you scroll through your Twitter feed or your Facebook feed or what have you. Where do we go from here in terms of trying to limit that content, whether the people seeing it are believing it or not?
So here's the thing. This is not something you're ever going to change from a volume and velocity perspective. The volume and velocity of misleading content is going to increase and will always increase. It's exhausting not to believe what you see, but that's where we all have to be. And truthfully, apparently, according to this survey, the older you are, the more vulnerable you are. So take this as a good warning. Make sure that you know what it is you're talking about before you retweet or repost or forward stuff to other people. And when you're reading it, have a healthy dose of skepticism as you're reading, because there's a really good chance, unless you know the source, and sometimes even if you do, what you're reading is just made up, and or not just by AI, just made up with the editorial point of view of someone who wants you to believe what they want you to believe. So start from a position of mistrust. You're always going to be good. Skepticism, that's the new watchword in the age of AI.
Helpful info for all of us. Thanks so much. That is Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group, Professor of Advanced Media in Residence at the Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the Odyssey app.